Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Next month kicks off the official start of sea turtle nesting season here in southwest Florida. Threatened loggerheads are the most prolific nesters on local beaches, but endangered green and even leatherback sea turtles also nest along southwest Florida's Gulf Coast and on barrier islands. Experts and volunteers with a number of monitoring and protection programs will begin trolling beaches in the pre-dawn hours, looking for signs of nesting activity, marking new nests, educating beachgoers, and documenting their findings. Today, we'll explore what residents and visitors can do to minimize their impacts and to help ensure a healthy nesting season. Also, a toxic red tide algae bloom that's been lingering in the Gulf just off the southwest Florida shoreline has been impacting sea turtles and other marine life in recent weeks. Joining me now to talk about that is Dr. Heather Barron. She's the director and head veterinarian at Crow's Wildlife Hospital on Sanibel Island. That's the Clinic for the Rehabilitation of Wildlife. Dr. Barron previously worked with the School of Veterinary Medicine in the Cayman Islands, where she also served as the veterinarian for the Cayman Turtle Farm and Cayman Wildlife Rescue. She's also past president of the Association of Avian Veterinarians, and she's a board-certified avian specialist and a licensed wildlife and sea turtle rehabilitator with more than 20 years of experience in practicing and teaching wildlife medicine. Dr. Barron, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Also joining us from the Conservancy of Southwest Florida's Sea Turtle Research Station on Key Wadin Island, we're joined by senior biologist Dave Addison. Yeah. His work with the Conservancy began more than 40 years ago, and he was honored last year when the Conservancy unveiled their new research station, which now bears his name. Addison is a well-known and well-respected expert in his field the world over and is behind one of the longest-running sea turtle monitoring and protection programs in the country, which has helped an estimated 285,000 loggerhead hatchlings survive. Dave Addison, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Nice to be here.
To ask a question or make a comment, give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Dave, I'd like to start with you. I mentioned that our official start of sea turtle nesting season begins in May, but sea turtles don't really follow human calendars. Have you witnessed any signs out there yet of early nesting activity?
No, we haven't. They usually don't... You don't see the first nest until the first day or so of May, but you never know when you might find one in April. There's been occasions in Collier County when that's happened.
Every once in a while. So Key Wadin Island there was hit pretty hard by Hurricane Irma last year. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, it effectively ended the nesting season on September 10th when it came through because it washed out every remaining nest we had. And the cages we had and the signs and everything else just... kind of got eaten by the ocean, so it made some serious impacts to the island, that's for sure. But you know, these things are resilient. They roll back and they move forward like the like the treads on a bulldozer, and sometimes they go forward, sometimes they go backwards.
Exactly. At that point when the hurricane hit, had there been some nests from the island that had already hatched out?
Yeah, there were some. We had a problem with feral hogs and coyotes this year that put a dent in it, but there were still nests hatching at the time that the storm hit, but it really did a number on us.
Yeah, so Key Wadin Island, where you're at, is only accessible by boat. Does that give the sea turtles a little bit of an advantage over nests in sand that are frequented by beachgoers?
It depends. Where we are, you know, there's no real problems with beach lighting, whereas in the urban beaches you do have some issues with urban glow and that sort of thing, and they get more hatchling disorientations because of that than we do on the island. There's people that are out here that are, you know, they come out for the weekend, or occasionally somebody will live out here for a while, but for the most part, once the summer comes and the mosquitoes and the no-see-em show up,
nobody else wants to live there.
Yeah, the turtles own the place, and there's these people with long-sleeve shirts and pants on that are going up and down the beach looking for turtles, and that's basically about it.
That's about all that you see out there. So, you know, we have people that move down to our area that are kind of new to those of us that are here all year round and have been here for a number of years kind of already know the drill. But could you give us a refresher course for people that are new to the area? How can people make things easier on our nesting sea turtles?
Well, the first thing you want to do is the sea turtle nesting season begins May 1st and ends October 31st, and at that time, there are ordinances throughout the state, Naples included, that require that you use turtle-friendly lighting or turn off your lights or pull the blinds so the beach is more attractive to the nesting turtles. And then once the hatchlings come out, they're attracted to the brightest spots on the horizon. And if that bright spot happens to be a decorative light on a palm tree, they'll go to the palm tree instead of the beach.
Yeah.
Or instead of the Gulf, and that's not a good thing. The other thing is, if you happen to see a turtle on a beach, if you're walking and it's nesting, stay away from it. Just don't shine flashlights on it. Don't take flash pictures of it. Just sit back and enjoy watching this animal go through a ritual that's been going on for 125 million years.
Yeah, resist the urge to shine a light on it and just actually see it
right,
live.
Right. They're interested in, you know, doing what they do, and it's best not to disturb them.
So what do you do if you see one going the wrong way? If you see a little, when we get down to hatching season.
A hatchling?
Yeah.
Well, you have to have a permit to handle these animals. So the best thing you can do if you see something like that, especially, let's say it's in the morning and you're walking the beach and you happen to see some hatchlings that have wandered the wrong way, that are on the beach, call FWC. I don't have their phone number handy at the moment, but you can also call Maura Krause with the county.
Uh-huh.
They handle these situations on urban beaches. So just leave them alone. Make sure you happen to know where they are. If you see the tracks going the wrong way, it's a good idea to contact the county and they'll come out and look into it. We monitor, the county and the conservancy monitor all the urban beaches in the morning. And obviously they're checking nests to see if anything went wrong or what went right.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes they'll have already found it because we're out there at the crack of dawn so we can see what happened over the course of the night.
Yeah, pre-dawn. They get up really early to do that, and those are volunteers, they're very well-trained volunteers, many of them, all of them. So I wanted to ask you, now that you've been in the Conservancy's current research facility on Key Wading for about a year now, how are you liking the new digs?
Well, the roof doesn't leak. That's a big deal.
That's
the
good.
Old place, the roof was like a strainer, and it's a huge, huge improvement over what we had before. We had the old place was one of the epicenters in Florida, I think, of mold. So it had the course. I mean, it was done. And so the Conservancy stepped up, and with help from supporters and donors, we were able to build this facility. And the truth of it is, when I came back out to the island right after Irma went through, there's a screen porch on this place, and I fully expected the screen porch to be blown out, but it didn't have a mark on it. The place stood up to the storm, actually better than I expected. I figured it would, you know, structurally it was sound. I didn't know what else would happen to it, but basically nothing.
So you're out there today. What are you doing out there today? What does the Conservancy do out there?
Well, we're getting ready for the season, doing some work, cleaning up around the building, getting some equipment organized. It's just something you do on a pretty much daily basis, coming out here and see what's going on. And then as we get later into the month, we'll check up and down the beach just to see if anything happened early on in the season. And I hire interns every year to work on this beach, and three of them will be coming next week. Three of the four will be here next week. So when we start coming down here, they'll get familiarized with it, get used to what goes on this barrier island over the course of the day and later on at night.
Well, you have a wealth of experience to share with interns, so they're lucky to get to go and learn from you. One of the long-held beliefs about sea turtles is that they return to the same beaches that they hatched from once they reach sexual maturity to lay their own nest. However, a 2013 study from the U.S. Geological Survey researchers tracking loggerheads in the northern Gulf found that several loggerheads travel distances of up to 250 miles to deposit eggs on beaches in both Alabama and the Florida Panhandle in just a matter of days. What do we really know about the degree of site fidelity that sea turtles demonstrate when it comes to where they nest?
Yeah, they call it philopatry, which is a fancy word for going back to the place you came from.
Uh-huh.
And I think some of them display more of that than others. We've satellite tagged a number of loggerheads off of this beach, and sometimes we'll see them coming back regularly, and they'll have the satellite tag on their backs. Other times, the satellite tag will show that they've gone up to Sanibel or down to the area around Cape Romano, White Horse Key, places like that, and hung out there for 15, 20 days. And if they've been there that long, odds are they nested somewhere else. So I would say that, you know, by and large, they'll come back to the same general area, but not always. And that's the beauty of wildlife. You can't really pigeonhole them. They'll always show you something different. And this is some of the variability that's built into their behavior that has helped them survive over time.
Maybe going in different spots helps them to survive a little bit better. If they keep going to the same spot, could be more risky behavior, maybe.
Yeah, right. You read peer-reviewed journals, articles are in peer-reviewed journals, and very, very rarely do you see the word absolutely.
The data
suggests or indicates, you know.
Although it is
equivocate a little bit.
Although it is a nice little thing to romanticize about, that the turtle goes right to the exact spot where it was born. It's just it's a fun story to tell, but not necessarily always.
Oh, yeah, we had a turtle 1 year that nested 7 times over the course of a season, which is a lot for a loggerhead. It's usually 4 or 5. And all of those nests, but one of them, were within, 1,000 feet of each other. The other nest was 3,000 or 4,000 feet down the beach. So it was very much was in a groove going back to an area that's very close to this, to where the previous nest had been. So they certainly can home in on places.
Yeah, and like you said, it kind of depends on the turtle.
Yeah, and the other thing, you find when they go to their foraging area after they're done nesting, and we satellite tag some of these turtles on 2 different occasions, and they go back to the same foraging area, just like they go back to the same nesting beach. And so for us, as human beings, you look out at the Gulf of Mexico, and if you took me 10 miles out in the Gulf and dumped me in the water, I probably wouldn't have a very good idea where I am. But these turtles certainly seem to have a sense of where they are and where they need to go in an area that is not something that we would necessarily, as a human, would have any idea where to go.
Not a lot of road signs out there, right?
No, there's not. You know, the old term trackless ocean. to us it is. To them, well, not necessarily.
Exactly. Well, ahead of the official start of sea turtle nesting season next month, we're exploring local ongoing research and protection efforts. If you'd like to get involved in the conversation, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. I want to shift now to Dr. Barron with the Wildlife Hospital and the Clinic for the Rehabilitation of Wildlife. We know that a lingering red tide algae bloom has been plaguing marine life in Gulf waters here in southwest Florida since this past fall. What has that meant for sea turtles out there?
Certainly it's been very impactive on sea turtles, and I think, you know, here we truly sort of see the tip of the iceberg, and that while we do have a number of animals currently hospitalized with red tide poisoning, or brevetoxicosis as we call it, that, you know, of the 4 animals that we have here, there's been a number of other animals that have stranded that didn't make it alive to the hospital, and I think there's probably many more animals that are just lost in the oceans and their bodies are never recovered. You know, certainly when we look at marine or sea birds, we see hundreds of those birds a year, and I think that's a pretty good reflection of there is a massive effect. And certainly this area is sort of one of the epicenters for red tides, and you can pretty much count on seeing some wildlife effects every single year, but some years are worse than others.
Is this year worse than others?
It's certainly been a bad year for sea turtles. About 10% of our caseload every year does come in with brevetoxicosis. We see over 4,000 cases in general every year. So 10% of that is, you know, over 400 animals every year are coming in to Crow with brevetoxicosis. And so, yeah, every year you're going to get some animals in, and this year has been a bad year, but not as bad as, say, back in 2012, 2013.
So what kind of signs or symptoms would you see a sea turtle that's impacted by red tide exhibit? I mean, what would people see? You know, maybe somebody in a boat, what would they find come up upon if there is a sea turtle that's suffering from red tide exposure?
Sure. So if they find them out in the water, that sea turtle may be just floating, appear disoriented, unable to dive, very depressed, and not afraid of humans, not trying to swim away. Frequently also they can be found on the beach, so they're stranded. And as was mentioned earlier, you do have to have a special license to handle these animals. So at that point, it is best to call an agency like Crow or call Florida Fish and Wildlife.
So if you see, so is it critical? Are those moments critical if a sea turtle's been impacted by red tide to get them out of the water? Or does waiting for officials to get there make more of a problem?
Certainly, they are reptiles, which means even though they live in the ocean, they don't breathe water, they breathe air, and certainly can be at risk of drowning if they're kind of washing in the surf. But otherwise, I would say, you know, it is best to wait for people to get there, because these animals can be dangerous. They can bite, and so people are definitely advised to get help as soon as possible.
And you're pretty responsive as a group, though. I mean, if somebody calls, how long does it take you to get there? I mean, obviously,
well,
it depends on the location.
If it's here on the island, yeah, we can be there within 5 to 10 minutes. If it's out on the water, then Marine Patrol with Fish and Wildlife may need to be called. Or, you know, if it's on more remote beaches, it may take us a little longer to get there. We also collaborate quite a bit with a group called Turtle Time, which is also here in the area and is licensed to do rescue of sea turtles when stranded.
So when we have a lingering red tide event like the one that we're dealing with now, it kind of starts to get into the sea turtle nesting season. Does that bring additional concerns for you?
Well, we really don't know as much about the effects of the toxins potentially on egg viability, but certainly it can cause some very abnormal behaviors in the animals. The algal blooms or Carinia brevis blooms do produce a nerve toxin or neurotoxin, and that can make behaviors very abnormal. But usually the red tide season and the nesting season are sort of disparate. So right about the time turtle nesting season is ending is right about the same time that the traditional red tide season begins.
So you see less red tide at about the same time that they start to nest?
Yeah, typically red tide season runs from the beginning of October through the end of April.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to, Dave Addison, I wanted to ask you, in the years that you've been monitoring sea turtle activity, have you ever seen a crossover where red tide is kind of creeps into the nesting season?
Well, we're down here today, and I've been coughing a little bit, so there's still some in the area. It's a funny business. One of the turtles that we had satellite tagged went up to Sanibel and hung out there for a long time. And during the time she was up there, they had a pretty nasty red tide outbreak, and she stayed there and came back a year or two later and nested. So I think some of the effects that this red tide has on some of these animals, which it certainly does, is probably a function of just how physiologically robust they are. You know, how are they able to handle these insults to their bodies? One of the things I neglected to mention, if you want to do something for turtles, and I'm sure Crow will agree with me, is if you're on a beach and you see one of these Mylar balloons that people use for birthday parties or plastic or whatever it is, please pick it up and dispose of it. These animals will mistake it for food, swallow it, and they'll get these intestinal blockages, and it fouls up their lower intestine, and they die a truly horrible death. So plastic is getting a lot of ink these days, and well, it should, but make sure you use that stuff responsibly. The other thing with plastic drinks and plastic bottles with the screw caps, if you're going to throw one of those out, screw the cap back on it, because birds will eat the caps, will ingest them.
Yeah, basically, so, if you have a trip to the beach, maybe turn it into a litter control project.
Well, that would, yeah, that would help. I mean, you can really load yourself up with some of this litter, but that's a very important thing that's going on, and you can find any amount of information about how this stuff affects wildlife.
And it's not a bad idea also teaching the kids early on, just make that part of the trip to the beach is picking up litter, just to make sure you keep it clean. And also, if you're taking food out in plastic bags from grocery stores, make sure to get those into the trash can too, I'd imagine.
Yeah, the this is completely off the subject, but Laysian albatrosses that nest on Midway Island out in the Pacific, they opened up a dead chick one day and were assessing it to see what was what had caused it to die, and in its stomach they found 47 disposable lighters.
Wow, that's a lot of lighters.
That's kind of a showstopper.
Yeah. Well, okay, so keeping the beaches clean is one of the most important things that we can do going into turtle nesting season, and, you know, really all year round, you know, because the stuff doesn't go away.
Yeah.
And keep things that could block their path off the beach. Bring in your beach chairs, things like
that. Right. Yeah, that's part of the ordinance, is if you've got a beach chair, it's no big thing to take it off the beach. And they seem to be unerringly able to run into this stuff. I was over on the East Coast one day, and somebody left a Hobie Cat out there, and there was one underneath the Hobie Cat banging around.
I love how they can
finally gave up and left.
They
yeah.
could navigate thousands of miles in the Gulf without any kind of go this way, and then they get stuck under.
Yeah, they can find a Hobie Cat.
Yeah, well, that's
and they do get tangled up in these beach chairs.
Yeah, I bet they do. So, but that's all the time that we have for this part of the show. But I really want to thank our guest, Dr. Heather Barron, who heads the Wildlife Hospital at the Clinic for Rehabilitation of Wildlife, or CROW, out on Sanibel Island. Thanks so much for talking with us. I really appreciate it, Dr. Barron.
Thank you, Julie. It's a pleasure, as always.
We've also been speaking with Conservancy of Southwest Florida senior biologist Dave Addison, who heads one of the longest-running sea turtle monitoring and protection programs in the nation. It was great to speak with you.
Yeah, great to be here. I'm always happy to talk to people on NPR, that's for sure.
Thanks so much. We love to hear that. Well, just ahead, we're going to round out today's show by looking at how Medicare is working to prevent identity theft and fraud, and what that will mean for Medicare recipients. Stay tuned.